Welcome to the 6 a.m. Run Podcast. My name is Mark Paysant. I'm an avid runner, a certified personal trainer, a 6 a.m. run ambassador, and host of the show. Be sure to head over to the website, 6amrun.com, to sign up today to get 20% off of your first order. Now, let's start the show. Hello, and welcome back to the show. And I said the show because you might be hearing this on 6 a.m. You might be hearing this on Relatively Normal. We're going to release the show on both platforms. And as always, both shows are brought to you by 6 a.m. Run and 6amrun.com. I am your host, Mark Paysant. Always a pleasure to have you a part of the show. Happy spring forward. I don't know what to say around this time of the year. I really wish it I think it's going away. I don't know if it is or not, but all I know is that it's lighter or later in the day, and we like this. I think we like this. I like this. So it is hard to get my kids to sleep when it's so light late at night, but that is another story, another podcast. I've already gone off the rails, but we have a great show for you today. We have a great guest. We have Dr. J. Ann Dunn, or as I will be calling her, Dr. J. For people my age and a little older, we all remember the great Philadelphia 76er. But Dr. J., thank you so much for being a part of the show. Why don't you go ahead and just introduce yourself for our audience?
All right. Thanks for the intro there, Mark. So I'm a chiropractic physician. My name is J. Actually, that's all they gave me at birth was the letter J. So it's confusing to people, but so I'm a chiropractic physician. I've been practicing for over 35 years and currently retired because I started to look into genetics and biochemistry, and that's really become a huge passion of mine. And so I'm talking to people about how their genes affect their physiology, how their genes affect their brain chemistry, how their genes affect their ability to live a happy, healthy life. And it's a big piece of the puzzle, the health puzzle, that's been missing for a long time. And we're finally able to really start to understand genes and how they affect us and how we can work with them and change the expression of our genes so that it changes the outcome of our lives.
So, you know, a lot of people, as they get into professional careers, they get into, you know, hiking, or they get into puzzles or books, but you said no, genes and biochemistry. Like there has to be a reason. You don't just stumble on it. There has to be a reason for that.
Yeah. True. It's kind of a weird passion, but I was kind of always looking for my own answers to my health issues, and I think a lot of healthcare practitioners do that. I struggled with some brain chemistry issues, depression for most of my life. And as a natural healthcare practitioner, you know, I had lots of tools in my bag, and I had a lot of people that really responded to everything I did, but I could never seem to fix myself. And I also had some chronic fatigue syndrome, you know, and I managed to get through the day, and I didn't really talk about it. And I think that's true of a lot of people that struggle, you know, with either energy or with mental health kind of things, that they don't talk about it and they just sort of muddle through, and a lot of people don't realize what they're struggling with. And, you know, I had a subset of people that I was working with too that didn't respond to the normal things that I would do, which is talking to them about, you know, their diet and their lifestyle and their exercise routines, or their getting adjusted, or, you know, all those factors that can contribute to health. Some people really responded to those, and other people, nothing, you know? And so I knew we were missing kind of a piece of the puzzle. And it's sort of been a lifelong mission of mine to look for, you know, what it is that makes our bodies healthy and what it is that causes disease. I always look for the deeper and deeper causes of those kind of issues. And so as, you know, I'm struggling with my own health issues and I'm thinking about what is it that we're missing? You know, I'm doing everything right. I'm eating the way I should. I'm exercising. I'm working on my attitude, you know, doing all the things right. But nothing worked for me. I'm not a fan of medicines, so I never really went that route. But I thought there has to be a reason. There has to be a reason for it. And so I started to hear this word methylation, which is, you know, sort of a biochemistry word. I started hearing people talk about it, and I was like, what is methylation? I got to know what this is. So I did a little bit of a deep dive into figuring out what that was. And I found this video by this guy who, his name was Rich von Koneinenberg, and he was talking about chronic fatigue syndrome and using his understanding of genes as information about why people have chronic fatigue syndrome. And I was watching this video and I'm sitting there going, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, this is the missing piece. And I'm getting chills and I knew it was. And it's methylation is just a biochemical pathway. I'll tell you what it is in a minute. But I knew that this was the missing piece because it just made so much sense. It was so logical. And so I got my genes tested, you know, did the 23andMe thing. At the time, that was, you know, pretty much all we had. And then I went into a software program, an online software program, and put my results in there. And it pulls out, you know, it was pulling out like about 30 genes at that time. And one of the genes that I inherited was a vitamin D receptor variant. And so just to give you a little background about genes, you know, you get the genes that you inherited, you get one set from mom, one set from dad. And that's your blueprint. That blueprint tells your body how to do certain things, how to make certain enzymes. And in this particular gene variant, the vitamin D receptor is what the VDR is. I got a variant from normal. And so from both parents. And so it's what we call a homozygous variant. And when I started to look into what does that do? What does that mean? You know, and my vitamin D levels were always like really low. And we know, you're probably aware of how critical vitamin D is for health overall. But I started to look into what does that mean when you have a genetic variant in a gene like that? What does that mean? What are the studies that have been done? And, you know, what are the risks? And so I started to look into that. And one of the first studies I came across was when you have a genetic variant in that vitamin D receptor, you have a high incidence of certain cancers. One of which was lung cancer when you smoke. And my father died of lung cancer when he was 55, pretty young, but he did everything to get it. He did all the wrong things. But the other thing was that vitamin D, when you can absorb it correctly, it's how our brain makes dopamine and serotonin, which are the happy hormones. And so it was really, it made me understand that maybe that was why that I was depressed my entire life. And the other thing that it does is activate your immune system. It activates what are called T cells that go after infections. And I thought, wow, well, this makes a lot of sense. It's got, you know, three of the elements that had been bothering me. One was trying to explain why my father died really early. His best friend did all the same things, smoking, drinking, not exercising, all the things you can do. He lived another 30 years doing those things, same things. And so that, you know, it's like all you can say about that is that's good genes, right? So once I figured out I had that vitamin D receptor, I was like, okay, it sucks to be me, or is there something we can do about it? You know, and so I started looking at, well, how does that enzyme work? How does that receptor work? Is there a way to upregulate it? And I did find a study that showed that there are cofactors for these enzymes. In other words, vitamins or minerals that make that enzyme work better or that receptor work better. And so when I figured out what they were for the VDR, it's like here's the VDR. You can't, the D's trying to get in there and it can't because the receptor is closed. When I found the cofactors, opened the receptor, D can get in. And then all these things started to happen. When I started to take those cofactors, my brain turned on and I went, oh my God, I think this is happy. I've heard about this. But I had never felt it because my brain couldn't make neurotransmitters correctly. And I thought, wow, this is huge because I've tried everything. And suddenly my brain chemistry changed and my immune system turned on. The chronic fatigue syndrome went away. and I got my life back. And it was like, holy moly, that was just one gene, you know? And so I got passionate about it. You know, it is, you know how it is when you're working on your own issues and you find something that really works for you. So that's why I spend my waking hours looking at genetics, biochem.
So, and that's amazing. I'm very happy for you. And I'm trying, my brain immediately goes to like simplifying things. Like you say all that and simplifying, but yeah. Is it, I just want to make sure, is it as easy as like finding the supplements your body doesn't make and taking them? Because I've heard, you know, varying contradictions on finding the food sources that have those vitamins and taking supplements. Is one better than the other? Is it that easy, or did I just oversimplify that?
No, it really is that easy, Mark, but it's knowing the right supplements for you, for your specific genetic variants. So, so each enzyme in the body requires different, substrates or not substrates, but cofactors or coenzymes. And so you can't just take a multiple vitamin and think, you know, oh, I got everything covered, because certain enzymes are going to be upregulated too much by a vitamin or a mineral in a multiple. So it's the precision kind of aspect of it that's really important. There's a genetic variant called the COMT, which is the catechol-O-methyltransferase, and it breaks down adrenaline. And so it's this is very logical, and it's very simplistic. Like you say, its job is to break down adrenaline. And if you have a genetic variant there, and it's homozygous, it's going to be reduced by about 70%. And so you can't just eat certain foods. That's a really hard thing to make up for, and getting the same with the VDR. You know, if you have a homozygous variant like I do, it's 70% reduced. And so that's a really hard thing to get, you know, 70% more vitamin D in my diet, or with the COMT enzyme that breaks down adrenaline. And so that one is associated, this makes sense, right? This, if you can't break down adrenaline, what do you think you're going to feel? You're going to be stressed all the time. You're going to be anxious, right? So it's simple in that concept that if there's an enzyme that's supposed to break down a neurotransmitter and you can't break it down, it's going to build up in your system. And if you take the right nutrient to fire up that enzyme, it's going to break it down faster. So it really is that simple.
So I just want to make sure, because, and I appreciate you breaking that down, when you talked about it before, the genes that we're born with, we get half of them from our mother, half of them from our father. Is it, and I don't know a better way to ask this question, so I'm just going to ask it. Is it kind of a life sentence from when we're born, or do our genes and our home, do these things change, or are we kind of stuck with this through our life? And the quicker we learn about the genes we have and the deficiencies we have, the better off we'll be.
Yeah, you're stuck with it. I mean, your genes are your genes. However, you can change the expression of your genes, and that's what we're talking about. We're talking about epigenetics, and even nutrigenomics is actually a better term. But they're not mutations. They're not, people get stuck on that idea of like, oh, I'm defective because I've inherited this genetic variant. And it's not so. You know, for example, the MAO gene is the warrior gene. And its job is to break down serotonin. And if you have a genetic variant there, you're going to have difficulty breaking down serotonin. And you might think that's a good thing, but too much serotonin actually makes you very aggressive and irritable and have a hair trigger temper. And it's there because your ancestors won the wars. You know, they were the ones who got to reproduce. The guys that didn't have it and weren't as aggressive, they're dead. And so the guys that won, you know, passed on their genetics. That's the prize. And so it's not a mutation. It is a variant that is an adaptation. So a lot of our genes are there because they allowed our ancestors to survive. And, you know, there's Genghis Khan, you know, like 80% of people in Mongolia are related to Genghis Khan because he was the warrior and won and passed on his genetics. But these variants just make you unique, and they will stay there for a lifetime. But like I say, you can turn a gene on and you can turn it off, and we can modify that through nutrients, diet, lifestyle, even emotional work can change the expression of your genes to a more optimal level. So I've got the MAO gene, and you know, my dad or my my brother is a genealogist. He looks into you know, ancestors and all that. Way back, our William the Conqueror was like my 65th grandfather. Not a nice guy. So I have the warrior gene, and if my nutrients aren't dialed in correctly, I can get really irritable, and I'm like, what is the matter with me? And we beat ourselves up. You know, this is the other piece of it is, you know, as I was depressed or if I was irritable, I would beat myself up. Like, why can't I just be nice? Why can't I just be happy? And society does that. It says, you know, come on, smile, think happy, be positive. But if your biochemistry is whacked out, it's difficult. It's a day-to-day, minute-by-minute chore. But when you get the right nutrients in to kind of modify these genes, it's easy. You know, you don't have to think about it. It's just, I live in Happyville now, and it's a much better place. I don't have to struggle with it, you know, all the time.
So it truly is like survival of the fittest really is a thing. Like, yeah. It really is a thing. Yeah. But as we move past the hunters and gatherers and the warriors and every, you know, the crusades, we move past all those things. And for the most of the world living in peace, I know there's parts that are not, but for most of the world, do those genes, like the warrior gene, for instance, does that slowly fade away, or is that going to continue throughout, you know, multiple generations?
Well, that's a really good question, because there are mutations that do happen, or variants, you know. And so if our lifestyles select for a more peaceful variant, then that will be passed on. Unfortunately, I don't think we're there yet. You know, as a species, we're still dog eat dog in a lot of ways. And so people that have a more aggressive, you know, demeanor, they tend to win, you know, still. And my hope is that eventually we will start selecting for good people who are more calm and less aggressive and more cooperative. And there's some really interesting genes involved with what are cooperative or relationship or love or connection that I think are starting to be more selected for. One of them is the oxytocin gene. And it's, you know, oxytocin is the love hormone, right? And so if you certain genetic variants are low in oxytocin, and these people are, you've probably met people like this where you don't feel anything from them. It's like, there's no warmth. There's no connection. There's no, like, there's nobody there. And other people who are like way too much oxytocin, they're way too out there loving, clingy, you know, like just want to love everything. It's all about balance. But, and then there's another genetic variant that codes for vasopressin, which is the relationship connection kind of gene. Or the hormone. So if you have genetic variants in that, it can make you more susceptible to fooling around. Or on the other under the spectrum, you know, you're very loyal and very connected to your spouse or your tribe or your people. And so it's just kind of a fascinating thing. So I think you're right. As we go along, we might be selecting for those that are more optimal for us as a species to survive, you know, what's coming, or, you know.
Yeah. And I think we've tried kind of change, at least in our part of the world, we kind of changed that warrior mindset to what you were talking about, like that aggressive, we like to call them alphas a lot of the time, that the go-getters, the people who put themselves out there, yeah, tend to get looked at more often and tend to put themselves out there and tend to be aggressive to go get what they want. And of course, they get the management positions, they get the C-suite positions, they become congressmen and congresswomen. And it's almost like they have that thought of, and this is not all of them, I don't mean generalized, but like the loudest in the room is right.
Yeah.
And that's, we all know that's not always the case. And I don't know how many times we've seen that kind of that relationship where we're kind of pushing that person. Hey, you have something to say, like you have something really smart to say, you know, like, say something, and they don't want to speak. Like they don't have that gene, I guess, they don't have it.
Right.
So this is very fascinating. And you've kind of talked about, you know, the genes and, you know, the physical part of it. So when we talk about people's personalities and attitudes and how they respond to certain triggers, mm-hmm. for instance, you know, I used to work with a guy that, you know, every time there was a call escalated from an angry customer, like nothing changed. He took it in stride, didn't affect mm-hmm. the rest of his day.
Yeah.
You know, me on the other hand, I'm sweating. I'm thinking about it the whole weekend. I'm like, okay, this, we got to do this, 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 and this. Yeah. Like our genes kind of, are they part of that structure of our personality and how we respond to triggers too?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So there, you know, it's a combination of things. It's never like one gene, one issue. It's often a combo. So for things like, and you're not talking about OCD, I get it, but it's sort of a mild form of it because it's like you want things to be perfect and calm and peaceful and, you know, everything you can do to sort of make that right. There are, you know, it's again, a combination of genes. So if you're not breaking down serotonin correctly, or you're not breaking down adrenaline correctly, it can make for an OCD kind of, personality. Or if you're an empath, you know, and you're on the, like the greens, what we call the green spectrum for oxytocin, you're one of those people that wants to make everybody happy and connect and love each other. And, you know, it's like, it bothers you when, somebody.
You're talking about me. You're talking. Oh, yes. You're literally talking about me. I'm like, oh go. Yeah. I apologize. Go on.
No, it's kind of cool to see that there are genetic variants behind a lot of these personality. I mean, it isn't like all genes because you know obviously your upbringing is going to have some effect on who you are, but it's amazing. You know, two siblings can be incredibly different. I've got what's called a novelty seeking gene. I'm always like, oh, let's start a new business, or let's move, or let's buy a new car. Let's, you know.
And Sounds exhausting.
It's exhausting. But my brother doesn't have the novelty seeking gene. He's been married to the same woman for like 40 years now, lived in the same house. He's in Duluth, actually, not far from you. Same house for 35 years, same job, you know. It would drive me crazy. He sits in a cubicle and he does the same thing every day. And it's like, no, you know, I couldn't do it. But I have a different set of genes than he does. We actually don't look very much alike. So it's fascinating how siblings can be even that much different.
It is funny because I'm a twin and fraternal. And we are, like when we're together, like, you know, like we're really dumb together. So like we share a brain when we get together. But like, away, like when we're away, like we're totally like he's in the military, he's a commander, he's like on top of his game, and I'm like all over the place, like, oh, let's do this, and I don't take anything too seriously, and he's like one of the most serious people I know, and that is I'm learning a lot right now, and it's absolutely fascinating. So when people hear this stuff, like when you, because I know some of the response, like you'll probably have the response that you're getting from me right now where it's like, oh, that's fascinating. Like, I want to learn more. Yeah. But other people are probably like, no, you're right. I control my own destiny. I make my own choices. Like, I don't care what you say, how many degrees you have, what kind of research you've done. I know me, and I don't care what you say. Like, you've got to get those kind of responses too.
Sure. Yeah. And this is all about risk, and, you know, it sort of colors your personality. It's not going to determine your personality at all. And you can overcome that. You know, there are people that, so there are certain genes that cause low dopamine, which makes for cravings, let's say for alcohol or cigarettes or drugs. And your brain is wired to be addicted. But there are certain people that can overcome that through willpower. You know, they just do it. We look at it like, wow, if we can balance our brain chemistry and get dopamine production up, the cool thing is it's a lot easier to quit those things. So yeah, it's nothing is written in stone, but it's definitely going to be harder for that person who's got low dopamine to get over an addictive kind of situation versus somebody who's got really strong willpower. I can quit anything. I got this. So yeah, none of it is determined. There's definitely going to be free choice in all of it. But very much colored. You're going to be surprised how much of it is. You're going to go, oh my God, that's from genes? I had no idea. Entrepreneurial tendencies are certain genetic variants that'll lead you into entrepreneurial sort of endeavors. And the gene itself is, it's actually a dopamine gene, and it's for this person, they're always trying to figure out a new, better way to do things. And, you know, there are certain people that'll follow a recipe to the T, and others who are like, but if I added a little cinnamon here, this could be better. So it's funny that that can be a genetic variant that makes you more like, let's figure out how to do this even better. You know, and so we need both. We need bean counters who are going to just do the thing, and we need people who are going to innovate.
So. Ain't that the truth? That is, truer words have never been spoken. And I would think that, and this is just me, thinking out loud, like the people who have that entrepreneurial spirit, like a part of them gets really like turned, like that new thing is like the shiny object. They're like, yes, yes, yes. But as time goes on, it kind of loses its luster, and they want to go to the next one. Have you found that people like that kind of, I don't want to say lack the discipline to like do the minutia of the work, but they just want to keep doing the new thing and the new thing.
Yes. And there are genetic variants that color that too. I hate to go back to that over and over, but for people who, you know, have that entrepreneurial tendency, but they also have, a set of other genes that have follow through, that give them follow through, they can take an idea, you know, to the other level. They'll let peons do the, you know, the minutia, but often they do get bored and they're like, okay, new company. I'm going to start a new company. I have to fight myself on that because it's like, I got 5 minutes. I can write another book. You know, it's like, stop. You know, you got stuff on your plate. Just do it. You know,
There's always more time, in your head, right? We always got time to do that. Yeah. I'm learning so much right now, but you know, we talk about the entrepreneurial spirit, and you are the author of the book, Holistic Kinesiology and Perfect Health in Paradise. And if that wasn't enough already, you're the CEO of My Happy Genes. So talk about My Happy Genes. What do you guys offer, and what can people expect when they go to the website?
Good question. So My Happy Genes is a software program that analyzes your DNA. So we have a lab where we send our DNA off to, or send your sample to. So if you go on to My Happy Genes, you can order the DNA test. It comes to your house and it's just a swab, and you send that to the lab. And in about 2 to 4 weeks, you get the results back. It's a DNA file and it's all private. One thing I want to mention is that all they have at the lab is a barcode. They never know your name or any information about you. It's a barcode. So it comes back, gets into your account, and then we can print reports from that. And so we have 5 reports that we do. The first one is the one we've been talking about, the mood and personality. And it shows you, you know, you have a high risk of being an entrepreneur. It's never going to be black and white. Oh, you're only going to be an entrepreneur, but you have a high risk of that. Or an addiction risk, or PTSD, or anxiety, or OCD, depression, and you know, all those things. You can see where your tendencies are there, but it also gives you a gene report. Like, these are all the genes you inherited in these biochemical pathways, and we test for 675,000 SNPs. We report on almost 600 of them now. But it'll show you like which ones you're homozygous in and which ones you're heterozygous and which ones you inherited the normal code for. And then the second report is diet and lifestyle. So once you get your first report and you go, now you know why you are the way you are, you can go, what do I do about it? You know, what's the diet that's best for me? Is it high carb, fat, protein? Do I stay away from nightshades, gluten, lactose, et cetera? So it can give you a good idea for your genetics. And everybody's got an opinion about diet, right? Everybody says, oh, especially athletes, you know, we're like, no, carnivore all the way. And the others that are saying, no, vegan, look how strong I am without meat. All that spectrum is huge, you know, omnivore or timing or eating every 3 hours or intermittent fasting. All of those opinions work for somebody. And so it tells you exactly for you, like, what's the best What's your best diet ratio and what's your best timing, et cetera. And then you can look at your disease risk. So after you get those first two reports, we would want you to work with a practitioner because when we're talking about disease risks, we don't want you to freak out like, oh, I'm going to get Alzheimer's. It's like, no, you have a risk there. But that doesn't mean you're going to get it. We're going to show you how to avoid that. There are some things you can do to avoid that. And then a biochemistry report and then a supplement recommendation. So we give you a questionnaire. You fill out, you know, your symptoms, and then the software calculates what genes you have, what the interplay is. You know, you might have this gene and this gene and this gene and this gene. So we look at how do those intersect. And then what is your best supplementation to kind of balance out all those genes? So, you know, like the warrior gene, once we get it balanced, it just, people calm down. It's the coolest thing to see, you know, if their temper just settles, or if their anxiety, it just settles down. Or in my case, my depression was just gone. And so it's really cool to see those positive changes where you get a whole lot more balanced. Doesn't change who you are, but it just kind of puts you into a more even keel. And then, you know, we look at other genes that might be involved in like your energy production. I hear a lot of people say, you know, I love exercise, but every time I exercise, I'm depleted. I'm exhausted. I can't do it because I'm going to pay for it the next couple of days. And we're like, well, just get out there and do it, push through it. But there are genetic variants that inhibit the ability to turn glucose or calories in our body into energy. And so when we can look at those particular genetic variants and upregulate those, then people get their energy back, their metabolism, they start being able to exercise, and it's a game changer. So it's kind of cool, the stuff you can learn.
And I'm right there with you on everybody is an expert when it comes to nutrition, like everyone. And even on this show, you know, I've had vegans on this show. I've had keto specialists. I've had carnivores, omnivores. I've had everybody. I'm always, you know, I'm that person that likes to, you know, be being the kumbaya, everybody be happy. I'm always that person. It's like, hey, you know what? You find what's good for you. But then I got people yelling at me, no, you need more protein. No, we're not, as a society, we're not enough carbs. And it's like, I don't know who's right. I don't know who's right. I can tell you right now, I tried vegetarian for an extended period of time and I had zero energy. Energy went away.
Me it too. Away. I did the same. Yeah.
But I tried it. But all this talk, it brings me back. And I don't know if people have seen this, but there was a show, I believe on Hulu, or I forgot which one of the shows, Limitless with Chris Hemsworth. And he had done one of these and he had found out that he received genes from both sides that gave him an increased risk for Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. His grandfather had died, you know, as a result of Alzheimer's. And it's one of those things where a lot of people won't do this because they'd rather be in the dark than know what's going to kill them. And I know that sounds very ominous. It sounds very, you know, just dark and lonely and bad. Mm-hmm. But to those people who would rather just, you know, ignorance is bliss, that person, mm-hmm. How can you kind of give them some just comfort knowing that whatever they get from this, there's still work we can do?
No, that's a really good question because I hear that a lot. Like, I don't want to know. But the cool thing is we're at an age now where knowledge is power, and that if you do know and you know what you can do to avoid it, I think that's a pretty smart thing to do. Because Alzheimer's is not a fun disease. Cancer, heart disease, none of those are fun, and there are ways to avoid it. And so that's the epigenetics or the nutrigenomics that we're talking about. In the case of, like, there are two genes for Alzheimer's that people are starting to look at, the APOE and the BDNF. And for the BDNF, I'll just give you the cliff notes here. The things that can modify that risk of, and this is an Alzheimer's gene, is three very simple things: cold showers, high intensity interval training, and intermittent fasting. So if you can add those things to your life, you're going to greatly reduce your risk of getting Alzheimer's if you have that genetic variant. So, I mean, those are doable. At the end of your shower, take 30 seconds of cold. And high intensity interval training, you know about that, right? You're an athlete. You know that those bursts of energy and then slowing down and bursts of energy and slowing down, that's going to increase what's called heart rate variability. And then, you know, the intermittent fasting, it just, again, the genetics can determine how long you can go on intermittent fasting. Some people can only go 12 hours, you know, so they stop eating at 6 p.m. and start eating again at 6 a.m. Others can go longer. It's all up to your physiology. If you go too long and your blood sugar starts to tank, that's not a good thing, you know? So, but those three simple things, you can really greatly reduce your risk of Alzheimer's.
That is very good information to know. And I guess another question I want to know is, you know, as I think people all understand, like the nutrition we're getting, the amount of food we're getting now, like food being so readily available for most of us, yeah, and the grazing kind of society we live in, where we're, a lot of us are rarely ever in a state of ketosis. We're rarely ever in a state where we don't have an energy source, mm-hmm, fat, sugar, glucose, something like that. Yeah. Will working with you or working with this program, will it give people the information they need to kind of get back into a more healthy lifestyle? Because you can do this program and get your results and get your genes and say, oh, you know, you lack this deficiency, or you have, excuse me, not lack, that was double negative. You have this deficiency. You lack this nutrient. This is the genes. And some people might hear that and say, okay, I'm going to continue what I'm doing, but I'm just going to take, you know, turmeric, or I'm just going to take vitamin D, or I'm just going to, in it. But is there, with this program, and you say people, you like people to work with a practitioner, will we be able to actually get people into a, I don't want to say healthier lifestyle, but I'll just say it, like a healthier lifestyle?
That's a really good question. And I'm glad you brought that up, because it brings up a good point. As a natural healthcare practitioner of 35 years, I can say there's a very small percentage of people that follow through with diet lifestyle changes. And the really cool thing is, Mark, though, when we started working and balancing brain chemistry, people could do it now suddenly. So there was a patient that really kind of made me realize what was happening. She was, she would fly in from New York to see me, and I was practicing in New Mexico. And she was over 300 pounds. She was enormous. And she had to buy two seats on the airplane because, you know, she didn't fit in one. And when I was talking to her, of course, obviously she's taking in a lot more calories than she's expending. And it's pretty obvious to both of us. But through the years, I keep talking to people about, you know, cut out the carbs and exercise. And they're like, uh-huh, yeah, okay, I try. I can't do it. I don't have the willpower. So I put her on a program designed around her genetics, very specific nutrients for her. And she went home and she called me a week later and she was crying. And I was like, you know, what's going on? And she said, it's not my fault. And I said, what's not your fault? She said, every night before I went to bed, my cravings were so bad that I would eat a whole package of Oreos before bed. And she said, on your program, I don't even want it. Sugar doesn't even sound good to me. And she's like, it's not my fault. It was my chemistry. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's huge. So what I have found is if we get their brain chemistry balanced, it's a paradigm shift. When we get their brain chemistry balanced, they lose the cravings. They can stick with a diet because they're not fighting these enormous cravings and having to call in the willpower that, you know, that not a lot of people have. I mean, some people can do that. Some people can just, you know, really buckle down and do that. But we found it with meth addicts. We found it with coke addicts. We found it with alcoholics, with cigarettes. If we get the brain balanced, then it's so much easier to just quit those things. And so that's the key, is doing that. And I noticed too that, oh my gosh, I'm starting to eat a lot more sugar. I think my program's off. It's backwards. If we think of it, of craving sugar as a symptom, not a cause, eating badly is also a symptom, you know, or eating too much or eating all the time or grazing. If you're hungry all the time, then your cells aren't producing energy. So that's something we need to look at. And that's what we look at with the program, is we need to get your metabolism going, your mitochondria really making ATP. And then you're not as hungry and you can control your appetite and you don't crave sugar. So it's kind of fascinating.
And I think this is a, yeah, story like that, and the stories you hear about addiction, whether it be drugs, sugar, you know, sex, workaholics, things like that. Yeah. I think this is kind of a reminder for all of us to kind of, you know, work on our empathy, especially for people. I mean, how many times have we all heard, well, just stop.
Just
what's wrong with you? Just stop.
Right.
Like, why can't you just and if it were that easy, like all of us would be in perfect health. We, you know, all of us would, there'd be no, you know, lung cancer because none of us would have smoked, and there would be, you know, everybody would spend, you know, so much time with their families because they wouldn't be at the office all night, or, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, I get it, where we're all different. We're unique. Some of us can do things others can't. Some of us have the ability. Let me rephrase that. Some of us has the ability to do things the others can't. And even the willpower part of it plays a role in it. Like if I hear another person say, it's just discipline, it's just willpower, which discipline is a big part. Like, let's be honest, like getting yourself to go do something constantly does take discipline, but it's easier for others,
right,
you know, to do that. So I think we all can get a education and empathy through all this.
100%. And that's one of my biggest messages. I'm glad you brought that up too, because I'm writing a book called Genetic Compassion. And it's about that, you know, and one of the things it gave me when I started to see why I had been depressed all my life, I was like, oh my gosh, I've been beating myself up for that. And started to have compassion for myself. And for this woman who was 300 pounds, I went, oh my gosh, people are beating her up. Like, stop, just put the ice cream down and go for a walk. We do that as a society. We do that. We beat people up. And it's so relieving to go, oh my gosh, this makes so much sense. This is why I've been anxious all my life. This is why I've been depressed. This is why I've been addicted. But it's stunning. You know, I had a patient that was a meth addict, and you know, who didn't get the message that meth is bad? Don't do it. I mean, anybody that doesn't know that, you know, like, but she tried it and she got hooked, and she had two little kids at home and would constantly leave them alone and go off, you know, with her meth buddies and not be home for a week or so. And the kids would call their aunt and say, mom's gone again. Can you come and get us? The aunt, you know, brought her in and said, can you do anything with this? And I was like, I don't know. This was in the beginning when we were first starting to do methylation and genetics. And I put her on a program. I didn't know what to expect. So a week later I checked in and she's like, yeah, no, I don't really, it doesn't even sound good anymore. I'm not interested. I'm like, okay, we'll see. You know, with addicts, you kind of got to give them a minute. A year went by and she got her kids back. She got a job. She got her house. She was doing great. And then she stopped her program. She stopped her supplements and went right back to meth. And the family called and said, don't let her run out of supplements. We will pay. And we put her back on her program and she's fine. This is 10 years down the road. I watch her on Instagram because, you know, I want to see, how's she doing? Never went back to it. And that's rare. With methamphetamine is one of the most addictive substances on the planet. So it was really cool to see, you know, how you can, if you flood the brain with enough dopamine, they lose that craving and they can stop it. So it's kind of cool.
That is an absolutely amazing story. And we really appreciate all the work that you're doing. You mentioned you watch her on Instagram. How can people learn more about you, find out about the books, the program? How can they follow you online?
Thank you. Yeah. So myhappygenes.com is the website, and there's a lot of information on there. I'm on YouTube. You can Google My Happy Genes YouTube or Dr. J. Dunn on YouTube. And there are a bunch of informational videos on there. There's sample reports on our website as well. If you want to take a look at what does our, you know, what do reports look like. And Instagram, we're on there as well, and LinkedIn. So yeah, we try to be everywhere. Facebook, we're on there too.
And I think the last question that I want to ask is, I think a lot of people, especially parents, might have this question is, and with parents trying to get in front of everything nowadays, is there any benefit to having this test done to young kids, to teenagers, to kind of give them a leg up? Or do we want them to kind of grow into their brains first?
Oh, no. It's a huge benefit if you can get the kids to take it. You know, if it's up to the parent, really, I guess, to say, hey, take your supplements. But kids,
is it the shape of a chicken nugget? Because if it's not, I don't know if my kid will take it. So,
can you put it in a milkshake or something?
Yes.
That's the trick, is getting the ticket. There are some supplements that are sort of kid friendly that can work as well. So, but yeah, it's a tough one. I know my daughter pushed back in her teens. She was like, "That's it, Mom, I'm not taking supplements again." I was like, "Fine." And then she started to get acne, and then she was back. She was like, "Fix this, Mom." You know, when it comes to your vanity.
You got to get them somewhere. Got to get them somewhere. If somehow the genes took away the slime from my youngest, she'd be on those supplements in a heartbeat. So I love that's just them. But thank you so much, Dr. J. This has been fascinating. If you're listening to either Relatively Normal or 6 a.m., you can stop the show right now, like I say always, and go to the show notes and click on the link to the website and the YouTube channel. Thank you so much for being a part of the show. I really appreciate it. This has been an absolutely eye-opening discussion, and I appreciate the work that you're doing. You have a great rest of your night.
Thanks, Mark. I appreciate your inviting me on. I enjoyed chatting with you.
Thank you, as always, for listening to the 6 a.m. Run podcast. Again, I am your host, Mark Paysant. Please like and subscribe to the show so you don't miss any of this amazing content. If you can, we would love if you left us a review. Remember to follow us online and use hashtag 6 a.m. Run to connect with the greatest group of runners and fitness enthusiasts in the world.